Hello, world. It's Mike Traverso with the Friends That Code podcast, where I get a chance to showcase some amazing people that I know that just happen to write code for a living. Folks, today I have the pleasure of speaking with someone whose path and mine have almost always crossed but never connected within the years since I've moved to the Tampa Bay area. See, when I moved down here, I was looking to join a community or at the very least talk to some people that wrote code for a living. Today's guest ran the Suncoast iOS meetup group. Unfortunately, I never made it down to a meetup due to work or running my own meetup group, but I really missed out. See, today's guest would teach people that attended these monthly meetups how to write code in Objective-C and Swift, and he would do it all for free. Yep, once a month, he'd make the trek down to the Tampa-St. Pete area, demonstrate how folks could make their own iOS app or make some component of their existing iOS app even cooler, maybe with animations or with less code or cover a part of the iOS SDK that folks weren't familiar with. In that same spirit of teaching a group of people how to code, today's guest was also writing books at the time on iOS development. iOS 10 Programming for Beginners, Learn iOS 11 Programming with Swift 4, iOS 12 Programming for Beginners, iOS 13 Programming for Beginners, and soon to be released Swift UI Projects. No joke, he's literally written the book on how to write apps in iOS with Swift. While he's writing books, going back and forth between his home and Tampa, volunteering to teach folks in the community how to write iOS apps, he's also working for FanReach, building mobile apps for NBA and NFL teams. But wait, folks, that's not all. There's more. He's also spending his time giving talks on iOS development for TriSwift and 360 iDev conferences. And this past summer, I happened upon a tweet from Natasha the Robot, where I saw TriSwift is running some workshops. I'm a fan of TriSwift, so I check, and today's guest is running a Swift UI workshop. Naturally, I signed up because I've always been a fan of today's guest and thought this would be a really cool opportunity to finally meet and learn some Swift UI. Now, I'm a fan of his achievements, his willingness to commute back and forth to Tampa to do some truly amazing things for the community, and last but certainly not least, because I was amazed by his time management skills. iOS developer, community organizer, conference speaker, author, workshop creator, and seemingly a master of time itself. Ladies and gentlemen, today's guest is Craig Clayton. Craig, thanks for joining us. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me.
Thanks. All right. Awesome. So like I said, we recently caught up during your latest Swift UI workshop. But you know, like I said, I knew you from when you took over the Suncoast iOS group, and that's how I know that you and I both live in the Tampa area, but what I didn't know was actually just how close together you and I live to each other. I thought that's pretty cool.
That is.
So we're kind of, we're in that same boat of that Tampa commute.
Definitely.
And it's really too bad that, you know, like COVID is forcing us to do this over the internet instead of maybe in person. So, but.
Agreed.
Okay. But anyway, I want to get back to Suncoast iOS for a sec. Like I said, I was looking forward to getting to those meetups, but at the time, you know, like I said, with work, the GDG group that I was running, I was dealing with cancer and just, you know, so no offense. It wasn't that I didn't want to go. It was just like, you know, after those days, you just kind of get exhausted and you're just like, you know, so unfortunately I never made it, but you ran that group from 2013 to 2017, right?
I don't even remember when I stopped. It was three and a half years, somewhere around there. So,
okay. Yeah. So roundabout.
Yeah.
Okay. And like I said, I mentioned that in the intro that you drove back and forth between your home and Tampa St. Pete to host and present the Suncoast iOS meetups. So, you know, for the folks out there listening and thinking, oh, you know, big deal, he drove, you know, I just want to point out that in one direction, that trip is 50 plus miles for you. Right. So, and I've done that, you know, before with a group I used to run, and it can be a pain. The last thing you want to do at the end of some workday is get in the car and drive 50 miles. But you did it month after month, you know, for years. What kept you motivated to keep supporting that community?
Well, I would say the beginning portion of when I did it, I was living more central to the area, so it wasn't as bad. And then shortly thereafter, in between, I bought a house, and the commitment was still there just because I enjoyed doing it. And that's really what kept me going. But then eventually it just became a lot. So I decided to focus mostly on writing my book and trying to turn towards getting my name out there, outside of the Tampa area, because no one really knew me other than just here.
Yeah, they definitely know you now. That's for sure.
I hope so.
No, definitely. So what are some of your, you know, I want to stick with the theme of the meetup though for a sec. What are some of your favorite moments from running a tech meetup?
So I think the most exciting part was realizing how popular Swift was. So when I first started, we weren't doing Swift, and then I would put in a Swift 101 meetup and 60 people would show up. And I was like, wow, okay. Then I'd go back to something else and it would drop to 20 or less. 20 signups, but then like 10 people would show. So then I was like, all right, so clearly Swift is what people want. So I did another one. And then I think the one that I enjoyed the most was I did a community-based algorithms one where it included the Rails group, the Ruby group, JavaScript group, my group, and then we did it down in St. Pete, and it was like 80 something people showed up. Wow. And basically we broke everyone into their groups that the language they wanted. But what was great was people who wanted to, like, they were kind of interested in Swift, but didn't want to go to a separate meeting. They were able to jump into the Swift room. And then there's always Swift developers learning Ruby. So it made them go into the Ruby room and learn. And that is kind of where I felt like it was a huge accomplishment to get everyone into one room and get people to understand what Swift is like, and then let other developers see what, you know, Swift and JavaScript and Ruby was like for them if they ever wanted to do that.
80 people is more than it's more people than I had at the first DevFest Florida conference that I ran. Wow. That's a lot. I mean, and you know, like I said, I ran the GDG group down here. We did everything Android development, and max, I think we would see 20 people. 80 people is a huge accomplishment.
I agree. It usually with the iOS meetups, it was pre-Swift, it was maybe 20 at the most, and you have a good topic and you get more. But
right,
that one by far was the biggest. But there were quite a few Swifts that just Swift alone that were pretty close, 50 plus people that would come and attend, and it would be packed. So I think I was fortunate to be around running a group when Swift came out, and I just benefited from that rather than it be more about me. So I kind of credit it more to Swift than anything else.
All right. Well, agree to disagree, but, you mentioned that many people coming to a group, and you know, that again, it's a quite accomplishment, but you know, you're not interacting with all 80 people. And you know from organizing these meetups that there's always folks that will come and attend and maybe sit in the back or now with COVID will attend a Zoom call or a Teams call, and they'll kind of just watch and they don't necessarily participate as much.
Right.
What advice do you have for some of those folks?
Well, I think it's more on usually the host. Like for me, if I saw someone come in, I would take the time to make sure I introduce myself, and I would try to, what I did with the Swift ones that were different than most is instead of just having a talk where I just, you know, talked, it was hands-on. And that year, my goal was everyone hands-on, no matter who your level was or what. And that kind of spawned into the algorithms one, where it was hands-on, where people could work in groups together and learn algorithms, because the fear of doing it by yourself is a lot more. Whereas if you're in a group, you'll understand an algorithm quicker than you will when you're solo. So I had read this in online and I was like, well, I'm going to try it. So I did it. With that experience, I try to include everyone, even if I couldn't physically go to the person's desk and help them out, someone else did. And I think that pushed more people to actually learn versus being afraid. I think sometimes people just need a nudge, and it's not like, you know, it's coding for some people is scary. So you really have to understand that. And I think for me being self-taught, I've gone through that being scared. And I think people who have gone to school for it don't remember when they were, because maybe they were really young when they were scared and they just did it and they didn't care. But for me as an adult learning programming and not really understanding it, not having someone I can actually talk to was probably the hardest thing I ever did, which is why I give back. So I know when somebody comes in that they probably have some of those same fears, if not more. So I try to, especially for minorities, I try to reach out, women, men, anything, and try to help out as much as I can, because I've been there. And Objective-C was very painful to learn. There wasn't tons of YouTube channels where you could learn Objective-C like you can with Swift. Mostly it was one main book that I read a lot. I probably read this one book like 16 times, just trying to understand it. And it just finally clicks, but it, you know, what I always tell people is it doesn't matter how long it takes you to learn it, as long as you learn it, because no one's going to be like, well, how long did it take you? No one's going to really care as long as you know what you're doing.
Exactly. No one asked that on an interview. How long did it take? And that's a really great take on that. Cause usually, you know, I like to preach, you know, to folks to network. You know, you go to these meetups to really network with folks. So if you are sitting in the back of the room, don't do yourself a disservice. You know, try to sit in the front. You know, talk to the first person giving a talk. Sometimes it even benefits you to give a 5-minute lightning talk if you can, because you know, community organizers are always looking for someone to take that burden off of their shoulders. So it's like, oh, 15 minutes I don't have to prepare content for. Sweet. Exactly. You know, so definitely always do that. But your take was really unique. And I haven't heard that yet, is that, you know, as an organizer, get out there and really try to bring everybody in. Don't leave it on to that person sitting in the back to realize they should be networking and asking questions. So that's really cool.
I think when you do that, it allows them to kind of get more comfortable with the group, and then they come back again. And then eventually they're the ones talking. And then it ends up being, I was fortunate. I had a few people that I have known before I took on the group. So they always had my back. If someone new came in, they would jump in and help. I could always count on, no matter what, they would always be at the event. So that also is helpful. Others who can jump in and help with somebody who's new. And even if they're slowing down and they just aren't keeping up, then they can just sit there and help them while everyone else learns at their pace. But I found hands-on worked better, because it's just, you can sit there and hear people talk for hours, but doesn't mean you really understand it. And most of it's in one ear and out the other. But when you make it hands-on, I think it gives people more of the ability to take it home and now not be so afraid of doing it on their own.
Right. Almost use like what you've heard, maybe if you don't understand all of it, but use it as inspiration.
Correct.
To then go home and do something with it.
Yep.
Okay, cool. You know, and you mentioned before kind of how it started to, like, you know, after a couple of years, like it does. I mean, look, I've been in the same situation where the grind gets to you preparing content, and I can get that. You've got the regular day job and all everything, creating workshop content, authoring books, right? Like, so, but I want to talk about the writing books part, right? Cause that's, you know, where you really kind of blow up from there. What got you into writing books?
So basically the summer I went to WWDC, I was still doing talks, but I happened to be in California, and I got an email on LinkedIn. And it was from Pact Publishing, and they were like, yeah, we wanted to see if you'd be interested in writing books. And I'm like, me write a book? Like, Yeah, I don't think so. So I talked to a friend named Juan, and he was like, you need to do it. You should do it, whatever. And of course, the people that don't have to do the work always tell you you should do it. Yes, I'm talking to you, Juan. And so it was funny because I didn't want to. I was like, that's a lot of work. And but I was curious as to why they picked me. And they were like, well, we saw everything you've done for your meetup group, and we felt that you were a good fit. And I was like, And so I was like, all right. So I gave it consideration and I foolishly said yes. And then the timeline came, and that was like, holy crap. So I basically started, I did a presentation at Realm. And while I was there during that presentation, I was already starting the book. So I did that presentation. I also went to TriSwift and gave a talk. And during that whole week I was there, I would have to get up at 6 a.m, go to a bodega, write my book, then get into the conference and then do stuff there, then go back to the hotel, or I was actually Airbnb, go back to my room and write some more. So it was, that first year was crazy. I think I started mid July and the last chapter I was done on November 24th of Thanksgiving.
Wow.
And so it was 600 plus pages.
Yeah. I mean, that's a daunting challenge to write a 600 page book, especially, you know, from writing no books
exactly
to one with 600 pages. So, but how do you jump into something like that and get it done? Like what was your flow?
So one thing I know is I've used books, and I know how I wanted the books to be. I was fortunate that the company I work for, my boss's wife loved, she's a lawyer, but she likes editing documents.
Oh, wow.
So instead of using, she was a beginner, like she's never coded. So I had her review every chapter. And then anytime I would say something, she'd be like, I don't get this. I don't understand this. And so it was like, she was telling me things that I would assume a beginner would know. And then I would be like, oh, well, I guess you're right. And then I learned like what not to say. So I'm like, okay, we're not even going to talk about it because I'm not going down that rabbit hole to try to explain it to a beginner. But I learned a lot from that. And I pretty much just, I took it from the standpoint of the first book was just really, I wouldn't say it was bad, but I was rushed so much that I couldn't finish the app first before I actually wrote the book. So by the time I went to second round was when I started changing, like trying to fix things, and I forgot to add things, and it was painful. But my now structure, even what I came up with, is I like to do design first and then do code, because to me, the getting the app ready to go and prototyping it and doing that, to me, is the way. I don't need data. I can just mock or make fake stuff to make it work, where then after that, I can then add the data. And so I tried to keep the book in that structure. iOS 13 actually was taken over by another author who basically just edited and put in his stuff for that book. So I don't really claim 13 to be my book, but he, wow, my name's on it, and he's involved more with that than I am. I got switched to Swift UI projects.
Well, I'll say this. If your name's on the title of the book,
Greg, yeah, I did work.
Don't argue with them, because they'll stop sending you checks.
Oh, they're not sending me checks for that book, unfortunately. So, but my overall structure, even in Swift projects now, is covering design and then covering code. Because what I realized was, there's two different audiences I'm going to attract. Beginners are kind of, they don't know, some of them know and some of them don't, but you have programmers who don't care about design, unfortunately. And then you have designers who want to learn, but you want to ease them into programming. So for me, design is an easy way to get them in. And with programmers, if they decide, they can just skip the chapter and go to the data part of it, and they still get out what they want. So for me, it was that structure.
And too, like, you know, in the real world, it's more natural to have, here's the design, you know, hey, developer, here's the design. Exactly. Go implement this. So that's a more natural kind of flow,
right,
for folks. So that's probably a better take on it anyway.
Agreed. But most, unfortunately, I would say most in the community don't. I've gotten so many weird reviews. I don't even read reviews anymore. At this point, I'm just like, it is what it is. I wrote it. If you like it, great. If you don't like it, great. But I don't read positive or negative reviews just because after a while they just become either they don't like you or they do. And what I realized at the beginning of some of them were they wanted either way too much or not enough or whatever. So I give what I can give. I have rules and that I think a lot of people don't understand, like the author wants. So after the first book, it was like, okay, we want to add the new features. So how do I take one app that and make it realistic? I didn't want to just stick in some widgets part of it if it didn't make sense. And so that was one thing that Pact let me do. If I didn't like the idea, I would be like, no. And then they would say yes, or, you know, they would be fine with it. But I just learned that it's better to present something that's realistic, because now here's an app that you write from beginning to end in a book where now you can see how I'm using each one of these different new features every year they come out. And I felt like that to me was what kind of separated my book from a lot of the others. I actually, even with a really short timeline, I enjoyed a writing part of it. I hated the timeline because I was literally writing a chapter, and you know, I don't have Paul Hudson skills to writing books. So it takes me a lot longer than like 2 or 3 days to write a book. And he takes him like an hour to write a book. I mean, yeah, he's amazing. And I've learned a lot from him, but for me, it's just like, I had 3 days to write a chapter and it would be like a 40-page chapter. And I'm like, and I'd have to get up at 6 in the morning and then work.
Right. And it's like I said, it's a lot, but the thing about a book, especially a technical book, is that it's a static document. It doesn't allow for change. These SDKs change every year. Sometimes every couple of months, there's changes, slight changes that make differences to things. So, you know, and you're right. Like, you really can't please everybody. But that wouldn't stop me from reading all the positive reviews. So if anybody wants to leave a positive review of this podcast, please let me know. Reach me.
Yes. I would agree. The one thing that for me that I've learned in this business is the reviews are reviews. It's not going to make or break me. So right. I do what I feel is the best I can do, and in the time frame I have. And like I said, I of course I want to get better. If somebody gives me constructive criticism, I'm cool with that. It's when you're just mad.
The internet's going to be the internet. So
yeah, I exactly.
About that. But I want to get to your Swift, your upcoming book. So I've got your Swift UI projects. It's called Swift UI Projects. I've got that book pre-ordered. So, nice. You know, for folks listening, we're recording this in early September. So I've already pre-ordered mine. By the time you hear this, I've already got mine. Yeah, fingers crossed, Amazon. but how can I get a sneak peek of, or can I get a sneak peek of what's going to be in store for me when I get my copy?
Sure. So I'm actually wrapping up the last two chapters as we speak. I'm about 90% finished with it. Okay. And then I can write. So these two chapters are probably the hardest for me because they cover CloudKit, and CloudKit is new to me in general. And so I took a TriSwift workshop with Mustafa, who did a CloudKit workshop, and I fell in love with it. And okay. I was determined to put it in the book. I was supposed to have this done maybe 2 weeks ago. And I got on chat with the publisher and I was like, I'm not there yet. I'm still learning. And Mustafa has gone into many Zoom chats with me and helped me a ton. So I would say within the next week and a half, I should have that wrapped up. And then over the course of the next couple of weeks, it'll be just editing, like doing second rounds. The publisher is a print on demand, so the book and the PDF will be available probably October, And then, I'm sorry, the PDF will be available right when it's ready. And then however long it takes them to print and send it through mail.
Okay.
But the rest of the book, I'm sorry, the rest of the book, it covers two chapters on watch. So you build two watch apps, you build two iPhone apps, and you build two iPad apps. And I did it in a way where each one does something or covers something slightly different. So you start with the basics, and then you make a generic sort of watch app, and then you make an NBA draft watch app for the one app. Then in the two iPhones, you create a order form for like Tesla, like a car order form. And that one strictly works with like doing some state-driven stuff and working with observable objects. And then the iPhone does another one where it's a financial app, and that uses core data. That one took me a really long time to do because I like covered a ton of stuff with core data from beginner to like intermediate.
It's a big topic.
It is huge. So that chapter is really big. And then the iPad app, we build a sports news app, which really goes into flexible layouts and how that works. We don't necessarily build a universal app, but it shows you how to make it to where you can resize it. You can drag in another view on the iPad and it'll resize accordingly and do all of that. And I cover it as much as I possibly can. And we also work with APIs so that I show you how to work with an API. The Tesla app does a post API, but this one actually pulls in data using Makun. So you'll have like feeds, and then you'll load into the dashboard, and then there'll be other pages that also load in with feeds. So I show you how to use Combine doing that. And then the last chapter is the CloudKit one.
Cool. Well, I'm excited. I'm a Swift developer. I do Swift and Kotlin and Java for a New York. I can say it's a New York based baseball team in the Bronx. So I could say that. So I'm looking forward to doing some new Swift UI stuff, keeping it fresh, doing some new things. But since I got you on the topic of this real quick, what's your favorite, your preference, NS constraint, auto layout, or Swift UI?
I would probably say Swift UI 1, auto layout 2, and I don't like constraints. So if I could make it 10th, I would.
Okay. All right. So when COVID-19 is over and I get my book, I'll buy lunch and you can sign my copy.
You got it.
Awesome. All right. Okay, so another book, and this, okay, so you've had your hand in contributing to this other book here. It's called Swift for Good.
Yes.
So first off, I've been off of Twitter for a while, starting in 2017, and I kind of came back onto social media and Twitter to kind of help promote this podcast. So I've been kind of social media blackout. So I missed when this book came out in April. So I just want to mention a couple of things, because this book is awesome, right? Swift for Good. It's written by 20 different authors, and each author donates their time and their writing to give a chapter for this book. And 100% of the book's proceeds goes to charity. And the charity is the amazing Black Girls Code. So I'll let Craig, if you want to tell a little bit more about it, but it's basically, it's an organization that helps obviously Black Girls Code and get into STEM careers. So, and promote that in the community. And not just, I don't think it's just girls, right?
Oh, it's not just girls, but
mostly
it's girls. Geared around Kimberly right. Made it geared towards girls.
Right. Right. So I want to mention this. So you've got some really heavy hitters besides Craig. You've got Erica Sadun, John Sundell, Ellen Shapiro, Kaya Thomas. And that's just naming a few, right? So how did you get involved in this such amazing project?
Fortunately, during my time with going around and giving talks, I've been at, I did a workshop in California actually, where, my next door neighbor giving a workshop was Paul, and my loud self, was probably overly loud and annoyed him. But, we met through there. It was like one of the first times, and I've done quite a few workshops since for different events, and he's there and we talk, and he just reached out to me and asked if I was interested, and it was a no-brainer for me to work on it. And I happened to be working on my own book, and the timeline for that was different at the time. It was supposed to be released in April. So I was coming into having to get my own book done, and that I decided that there wasn't no way I was going to say no to not writing a chapter on this.
Yeah. I mean, I hope that there's more of these kinds of books. Like I said, I just found this yesterday because I was doing research producing the show here, and I'm like, oh my God, what? And so I went and bought a copy of the book, but wow. So it's just so shocked. So this is one of the reasons I like doing the podcast, because I get to learn so much about what's going on, not just in the community, but what all the amazing things that people are doing out there. And this is one of them. And like you said, your chapter was on complex UI layouts in Swift. So again, there's just so much cool stuff in this book. So folks, I'm going to put the link to this in the show notes, because it is truly an amazing book. And then it helps an amazing charity as well. So it's only $40. You get the PDF, you get all the code, you get the EPUB, the EPUB book, if you want to read it on your Kindle or your other type of, e-ink reading device. It's really cool. Really cool stuff. So Craig, moving on to workshops, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've written a fair number of these over the years, right? So you go back to Coco Academy, you've got games, you've got Sprite Kit, you've got Apple TV games, beginner content. And so most recently you've got Swift UI 2.0 complex UI design. And it's a workshop that you did, and you hosted, it was hosted by TriSwift.
Yes.
So first question is, can folks still access your older workshops?
So none of those were actually recorded. Well, a couple, but I have actually no clue how to get to them. I am in the process of working out a new site called designtoswiftui.io. And that site is basically going to be centered around coding and basically what it says, going from a design to Swift UI and building apps. So the workshop you took was a 2-hour version of that. And I'm working on a mini video course to come out in October that will cover from beginning to end how to build that app. I've already got it pretty much redesigned in a way. And I should have more information in the next coming weeks. I'm juggling two things at once right now, so I'm trying to get it I'm trying to do both at the same time. So it's not proceeding as fast as I'd like, but my goal is sometime in October to have that out. And then I did another design for a shoe app that I posted on LinkedIn, and I had a ton of really good reviews, and people said they wanted a video course from it. So that'll be my second one. And so I am not offering the workshop anymore. I'm actually working on a new one for TriSwift that starts next week. And that one is flexible layout for iPhone and iPad. And that the goal of that one is to show you how to work on a design to work in both iPhone and iPad and landscape and portrait, and some of the tricks you can use to make your layouts work.
Very cool. Yeah, I mean, because that Swift UI 2.0 complex UI design, that was a very hard to get into workshop. I remember I bought my ticket, and then boom, it was done. That was it. So maybe I got the last ticket, but that was a really cool workshop. And I encourage folks that, be on, lookout for this, follow Craig on Twitter, at the DevMe, and I'll have all this kind of stuff in the show notes as well. But, be on the lookout for this kind of content, because it was a really great workshop that we took. And, to go through a mini course with all that content, really, if you're new to Swift UI, you really have to get into it. So I wouldn't say required reading, but I guess required watching would be the
thing. I was shocked that it sold out as quickly, and I thought I was going to just do it a couple of times and then that was it. And Natasha was like, no, you're going to do this more than once.
Yeah, I told you. You're a big deal, Craig. I don't know. Why do I have to keep telling you this? I better stop because you're going to charge me for that autograph. So.
Definitely not. My mom maybe, but no.
moms are the best agents, right?
Aren't they? She buys the book and she doesn't understand a word. And I'm just like, why are you buying the book? Well, I'm supporting you. I'd get like $2 from it. Stop buying the book. So I'm like, I'll just give you one. I got 4 copies here for you. No, I want to buy it.
That's okay. Adorable though. Really So we got that new business that you're setting up, and we know that you're going to do that workshop. Are you going to continue that with additional content kind of down the road?
Yes. Yeah, so this is kind of the direction I want to go. So right now it's the mini course and then the shoe one. And then I'm going to actually take the shoe app and tie it into CloudKit. So I'm going to do an entire CloudKit course on creating like a customer facing app and then basically an admin app sort of thing where you can go in and do different things from both sides of perspectives. And it's kind of similar to what I did in the book, but I'm going to go way more in detail with this one. In the book, we do like a shoe POS system and an admin app, and you can add new shoes and do all that stuff. But this one is, sort of slightly different in the aspect of scenarios and look. It's not really a shoe POS system. It's more like customer facing where the customers see the app and then you have the person who's selling whatever you're selling and you can add products and feature products and do that kind of thing.
Oh, cool.
So my goal is to keep adding. I really want to keep adding new things, but the difference is I want to do other designers' work. So my goal is to try to find some minorities that aren't sort of really out there as far as design goes and utilize their work, because as a developer, you work with different designers. And I feel like, okay, if you do 2 or 3 of my designs, then there are a lot of similarities. But for example, Ming Tu, he does a lot of drop shadows and a lot of things that I don't necessarily use. And so developers need to know how to do different things and not stick to the same design. And so my goal is to offer designs that are different by different people. So you know how to approach it and you can see, like I can look at a design and say, yes, no, this is where it's going to be a difficulty. This is where it's not. And I can do that with both SwiftUI and with Storyboard or UIKit. So for me, I have that ability, but not a lot of people have that experience. And so that's what I want to help people with, is being able to look at a design and break it down into small components. And how would I build it for UIKit? How would I build it for SwiftUI?
All right. I might know somebody because I just gave away some free stuff to somebody on Twitter. And I might be able to put you in touch with someone that you're looking for.
Perfect. That would be great. Because awesome. I've got a couple of people that have been saying they're going to get me stuff, but I need to lock down. I really want to do a Mac course as well. So there's a few things I have in line, but right now I just need to get my stuff done. And then my goal is to just keep pumping out courses with different design to SwiftUI content that covers different things like CloudKit, Core Data, all that stuff.
Cool. Do you have any idea like what you might do like down the road from just a development perspective on some of these courses? Like what? So you've got CloudKit that you're going to work on, but do you know what's beyond that? I know that you don't have any of that planned out right now, and so nobody should be listening and thinking, okay, I'll wait for that. But what's something else that's totally like you're really interested in?
So the other thing, a part of the design to SwiftUI that I'm working on as well, which will happen eventually, is weekly videos. And that will be more focused and geared towards little topics, sort of kind of the premise of a meetup group would be, okay, where I cover something and I don't go full-fledged into it, but I cover that specific topic to a point where you really understand it. Because I feel like that kind of content's great. I just... I feel like the weekly stuff is a good avenue for those who may know some of the things, but maybe one content, one thing here, one thing there, they may not know. And so that helps them with anything they're looking at. So that's the other direction I'm going. And as far as like specifically, honestly, Core Data and CloudKit are probably the two biggest requests that I've seen. And then just design part, like I really want beautiful apps and how I make them work, how I make them look, just not being afraid. I think that's the thing. Too many people are trying to take UIKit and make it work with Swift UI. And I think that's really a bad approach. You really just have to come at it new, look at it in a different lens, because of them. And as soon as you start trying to take UIKit and make it into Swift UI, then you start complaining about what you don't have rather than the things you do have, because Swift UI has a lot of things that really make doing design easier that kicks UIKit's ass. And I think that's the problem. People are too hung up on what it doesn't have.
Right. I mean, that's one of the reasons I'm looking forward to your book and why I took your workshop, because I, you know, UIKit, no problem. Storyboards, no problem. You know, custom right. views, no problem. Swift UI, big problem, because it's a complete kind of paradigm shift in the language.
So
once you got on that Swift train, you know, and you left the station, you know, there's another train going full steam ahead in this, you know, Swift UI direction. So, and it's once, it's one of these things where I think when you get it and it clicks, it's just like, oh, I don't have to write all of this other code. Sweet.
Exactly.
So Google's working on something similar with Compose for Android. So if you're listening yes. and you're thinking of Swift UI, how do I, you know, what's going on with the Java and Kotlin? Well, you know, you've got Compose with Kotlin. So, all right. So that's pretty much it. That's all. Those are the questions I've got right now. I've got one last quick question for you, Craig.
Okay.
Before we jump into some retrospective questions, who is Mrs. Aria?
Miss Aria is my French bulldog who is sitting in the other room, probably staring at the door, waiting for me to walk out. Cause I knew if I left her in here, she'd be jumping all over me during this whole interview.
Cool. Very cool. And the reason I ask is because I was, like I said, I was doing research for the show and I come across, you've got an Instagram.
Yes. For her
account. Right. Well, hold on. So I found your Instagram. And I don't have an Instagram account. Remember, social media blackout. I don't, you know, I'm on Twitter just to do this show promotion. So I see that. And then I see in the bio, there's a link to your dog has its own Instagram account. So
yes.
I'm going to, if you don't mind, I'll put the link to your dog's Instagram account in the show notes.
Okay. That works. It's the reason I have it is mostly because my main Instagram is mostly food.
Yeah.
And most people who follow me are for food. And I found that dog lovers just like, they constantly want me to post videos and pictures of her. So instead of always posting it in my main one, I just let her have her own and and post there whenever I feel the need. She needs to be out star. There, but yeah, she's a diva herself.
Nice. Okay. All right. Well, so if you don't mind, we're going to talk about some we'll talk about some retrospective questions.
Okay.
All right. So what are some of the challenges you struggled with as a developer coming up?
Wow. The main things I struggled with a lot being self-taught, algorithms, I still struggle with. I still haven't really gotten into it. It's probably one of the things that every time I want to dig into it, I find something that is more important at the time. Writing books and doing videos are just kind of supersede that. But algorithms were really one of the main ones, and I never really got into it. The design patterns took me a little time to get it. I came from another programming language, ActionScript. So at the time, it was really hard to understand these brackets. And I felt like that was my real first programming language. So for me, it was a little easier, but I remember getting up early in the morning, watching the Stanford videos, because that was really like the de facto place to go. and spend 2 hours watching the video, and then he cut it off, and I'd be like, really? And I'd be sitting there like, okay, I have all this code that doesn't work because he cut off the last like 5 minutes of to make it work. And then I get so frustrated, and then I'll be like, okay, this doesn't work. So what I realized was I needed a project. So I created a Raider app was the first one, and a Laker app. I did both football and basketball. And I just was like, I'm going to build those apps as my way to learn, because then that will give me the direction of where I need to go for whatever video I'm looking for or content I'm looking for, rather than just trying to take in all this content first. So then I was like just collecting books and just saying, okay, when I need this, I bookmark that. And when I need that, I bookmark this. And I think that was probably the hardest, was getting past the hurdle of knowing really what it is I was looking for when I first started, and then how to implement it. And design patterns was a little weird as far as like getting also into the transition of coming from ActionScript 3 to Objective-C.
Right. And you mentioned kind of trouble with algorithms, even going through computer science, you know, algorithms aren't the easiest thing to be taught. But one thing is, I found a really great book. It's called Once Upon an Algorithm. Mm-hmm. And it's a really cool book that kind of talks about algorithms with kind of story, you know, a fairy tale kind of things. So it kind of unites the two and kind of has a nice explanation of them, as opposed to that white and green book with the red leaves on it. I forget the name of that, but that's the algorithm book that a lot of folks know. But I struggle at any level, you know, that's not unique. Trust me.
That is definitely true. And I just found that book, so I'm definitely going to check it out.
Excellent. What advice would you give yourself, your younger self, if you could go back, now that you've got all these career experiences?
Start earlier. I never had a computer at all in high school.
Okay.
I didn't have my first laptop or computer until I was in my mid to late 20s. And so I was real behind. I took a typing class and I typed really fast. But I didn't have anything to work. Like, it wasn't like a laptop wasn't something I had, or a computer wasn't something I had until I could afford one. So even then, once I got a computer, programming wasn't like even a thought in my mind. So it would be talking to my like 20-year-old self and saying, find a way, hustle, and get a laptop and start working on it, rather than waiting until like my mid to late 20s.
Okay, cool. Very cool. So what's the one thing you do to escape, clear your mind from writing code, writing books, writing workshops, or maybe just technology in general?
Cook. I'm a big, my neighborhood is... my block or my street, I'm probably the most sought after person here with food, because I grill and barbecue, and I get text messages all the time. Are you grilling? Oh, really? I smelled something. Yes, it is. It's pretty funny. It constantly happens. I'll be smoking something and the whole block smells. And so I get text message and people asking me, what am I doing? What am I cooking? And I usually share for the most part. Like when I first started learning brisket, I think I gave it to like 6 neighbors, because it was like, there was no way I was going to get through eating all of that.
Right.
But I enjoy cooking. So that's a great escape. And TV shows, binge watch TV shows
right now. Yeah. What do you want? What is Craig Clayton watching right now?
I just finished a show that I liked, which was Power. And now they just did a spinoff. So that's started, but I would say right now my favorite is probably Lovecraft Country. Okay. And that one is excellent. And it's new and I like it. And then the other HBO show, which is not off the top of my head, with a little girl and come on, what is the name of the show? And I can't believe that I'm like going blank on this name, because I really do enjoy it. His Dark Materials.
Oh, okay. Why is that ringing a bell?
It's HBO. They're already in one season, I believe, now.
Oh, okay. So that's the little girl from Logan.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
That show is, it brings back memories of Game of Thrones in the sense of, like, when I first watched Game of Thrones, I was like, okay, this is dope. And then that show is great. I'm not comparing it to Game of Thrones by any means, but just my overall interest in it is as much as I had when I was watching Game of Thrones.
And I think that's whether that's a spinoff of a Golden Compass.
Yes, it is the Golden Compass.
Okay. Okay, cool. I got to check that out. My wife and I have been watching a lot of Cobra Kai, which I'm so mad. You know, I love it and I'm so mad at it at the same time. Like, I don't want to be rooting for Johnny Lawrence.
So but... I watched a couple episodes and I'm like, okay, it's a little cheesy.
Oh, it's very cheesy.
I had some other shows to watch, so I just said I'll come back to it. But yeah, I can understand where it's coming from.
It's very cheesy. I'm not taking any. It is a complete cheese festival. Okay, but I like I said, it's when you start to get if you're into the characters, and like I said, I grew up with the Karate Kid, you know, and you and I kind of had a little bit of a quick chat on Twitter just before this where we were talking about the Fresh Prince trailer.
Oh yes. So
from Morgan Cooper.
Yeah.
And that, so, I mean, like I mentioned on Twitter, all they've got to do is find a way to retell the Goonies. And you know, my childhood will have made its way into the 21st century.
Man, I'm so excited. I didn't see the trailer until I got a notification today on YouTube and Will had announced that they had signed 2 seasons. And I was like, so I went in and watched the trailer and I was like, wow. And then I'm like, it's a great show, but please put Will in it. Like, you've got to find a way to put Will, because just the, oh, man, that's the show. Like, I literally remember as a kid, just that and Cosby Show. Like, I watched those two shows. And so for me, I think to making it into more of a drama than a comedy is just,
man. That was a really unique spin on it. And I think if you go back and watch the trailer, there's a tech YouTuber in there. I thought I saw a tech YouTuber in there. The kid he's playing basketball with, that split second. And then I think the guy he punches is another YouTuber, not a tech YouTuber, but another YouTuber. I'm not big on YouTubers. I don't know their names, but
I didn't even notice that. So that's pretty funny. But yeah, man, I mean, it's crazy that that off of that alone, they'd signed 2 seasons.
And I could believe every other character except for Uncle Phil.
Yeah.
Every other actor.
Uncle Phil was the bomb. Like, that is probably the only harder other character would be Will. Like, those are the two hardest characters to
replicate. Yeah. But with the way they're telling it and the way they're making it a drama, like, I can believe another actor, a younger actor can show that. But
yes,
and the actor, and again, he's a great actor in the trailer that's doing the, you know, the Uncle Phil part, and he's got the voice. And then once you look, they got to gray him up and maybe, you know, beef him up a bit, and then I'll believe it. You know,
I think it should just be Will.
Okay. That's another
thing. I think they should make Will, like, get him, do what they did with Nutty Professor, make him a little bigger, and just he played Phil as good as, you know, anyone, even when he was a kid. So I could imagine him doing that character and doing an homage to him as a tribute to him because of his passing. But man,
that would be great.
I can't wait. I'm so excited about it.
Okay, Craig, I got one last question for you.
Okay.
It's about self-promotion. Folks in our profession, they do not get a lot of opportunities to promote themselves. So what about yourself are you most proud of, you love the most, or something about you that you use to inspire confidence in yourself?
Oh, wow, that's a tough question. To be honest, I don't even know if I can answer that.
Well, I'll fill some time while you think. I ask every guest the same question. And the reason I do is because I want people that are listening to ask themselves this question. You know, what is it that they do really well that they are very proud of, that if they needed to, like, what can they look back on and be like, yeah, you know what? I do kick ass. I am great at this thing. And that's, you know, if I can do that thing, I can totally do these other things. So now okay, that I've stalled a little bit.
that helps. I guess the main thing would be being able to do both design and develop at the same time. I did a presentation and I called that being a unicorn. And I feel like there's very few designers and developers, and I can understand both sides, and I can take a design from scratch and design it myself and make it look great. I mean, of course it's not going to be on the full level of what designers can do, but I'm close and I'm working at getting better every year, trying to just improve my design skills. So I would say that's probably the main thing that I'm probably most proud of outside of just programming and learning in general, is being able to do any design I want in my head.
And you can add to that teaching and authoring.
All right. Yeah. Oh. Yes.
All right. Awesome. Craig, I hope you had some fun hanging out tonight.
I did. Definitely.
Excellent. All right. So for folks out there that are interested in hearing more from Craig on iOS development, you could pick up one of his books. I'll have links to all of them in the show notes. You could follow him on Twitter at the dev me. Keep an eye out for Craig's new video course as well. Links to everything will be in the show notes when the show gets posted. I'm even going to put links to Craig's appearances on the Realm Academy as well. Right?
Yes.
Thanks again, Craig. And thank you all for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. We're on a bunch of your favorite podcast platforms: Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Anchor, and more. So subscribe on your favorite podcast platform to Friends That Code. And tell your friends, because next week we'll be back again with another amazing person that I know that just happens to write code for a living. Until then, everyone, be well.